I'm Ted Robertson. Welcome to part two of a three-part series on substance use disorder presented by the University of Colorado's Colorado Consortium for Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention Affected Family and Friends Work Group. It's produced here in the Veterans Voice studio located on the campus of Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Today's topic is something that affects millions of Americans, including veterans and their families, every day, and that is substance use disorder. It's a subject that's touched many of us personally, either through our own substance use disorder or a family member's. Today, the second part in this series on substance use disorder as seen through the family lens. We hope that by the end of this series, you'll feel empowered to support your loved one through a very trying and difficult disease. We hope to reduce stigma and help to start the conversation that can ultimately save a life. Sarah and Tracy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Ted. My world changed in an instant when I learned that we lost our son, Evan, October 21st, 2018. To an accidental substance overdose. I know we can't change the past, and I've had plenty of times in which I've said, I should have done this better, or I should have seen these signs. In our experience as a family, we were confused and fearful about the unknown of the disease of addiction. Many families like ours don't know how to reach out for support with those whom we can trust in a non-judgmental and safe space. Families deserve recovery too, and they need resources to help guide their loved ones toward treatment and recovery, while also learning self-care skills of their own, regardless of whether their loved one seeks treatment or not. It takes time, love, and patience through this journey, but recovery is possible.
Thank you, Tracy. I became involved with a Colorado consortium after the death of my nephew, John, from an overdose. I knew he'd been experimenting with marijuana and alcohol, but I was shocked when he entered substance use treatment. When John left treatment, he came to Colorado with his parents and stayed with my husband and me for several weeks before starting college. We did not realize he had returned to substance use. His death left us grieving and filled us with guilt. Why didn't we do something? Education, support, and asking those hard questions are so important in dealing with the disease of substance use disorder. We hope these podcasts inspire others to seek information and support and to cast off the veil of stigma and ignorance around this disease. I want to thank Ted and Veterans Voice for inviting us to participate in these podcasts. Thanks also to the Colorado Consortium and their continued support for the Affected Family and Friends Work Group. SAFE Project, which stands for Stop the Addiction Fatality Epidemic, has fabulous programs for both active duty and retired military and their families, and graciously offered information and resources for us to share. I also want to give a shout out for our consortium liaison, Hillary Bryant. The idea for these interviews came from her, and she has worked tirelessly with us to bring them to life.
Michael is a current senior master sergeant in the Air Force. He's preparing to retire after serving 21 years in the Air Force. Today, he's going to share his journey through substance use disorder and offer insight into his family dynamics.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much for your service to our country and for your willingness to share your story today. You know, substance use disorder encompasses not only drugs, but also alcohol. And so we understand that you're going to share your story with us.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for allowing me to be here and to share my story. It's definitely been a couple of challenging years, but I'm happy to be here and help as much as I can. I grew up on a military installation in El Paso, Texas. My dad was a 23-year Vietnam vet. chose to make the Army his career. Definitely grew up in, I guess you could call normal family, older brother, older sister. My parents married till the day they died. So great childhood, very athletic, did very well in school. There was some childhood trauma that I am quite sure ended up affecting my behavior later on in life. But yeah, growing up, super supportive family, you know, constantly playing sports with my dad, had a great relationship with my brother and my sister. My mom and I were best friends up until she passed. But I can remember after my father retired from the Army, he moved our family out to Las Vegas, actually Henderson, Nevada, which is a suburb of Las Vegas. And I began a very deep passion for music and skateboarding. And, you know, sometimes along with those types of countercultures, kids experiment, you know, with different things, you know, some good, some bad. I can remember at the age of about 13 or 14 having my first drink, and just really realizing that that feeling was something that I wanted to experience all the time. Even as an athletic kid and somebody who excelled in school, you know, I felt like I was pretty outgoing and charismatic guy, but I was also very insecure about a lot of things, like we all are as adolescents, and alcohol seemed to be the answer. So I can remember, again, just that first drink making me feel normal, if you will, and just kind of able to not have to deal with those inhibitions that I was experiencing, especially in early adolescence. You know, so throughout high school, you know, typical drinker, I guess you could say, you know, you're young, it's not as accessible. Somehow I was always able to make it pretty accessible, especially as a kid who played in a band in high school and, you know, was very social and at a lot of events where alcohol was prominent. Into my early 20s, after graduating high school, I attended the University of Las Vegas, Nevada, in hopes of becoming a teacher. But I spent most of my time drinking and playing in a punk rock band and kind of touring all around Las Vegas with hopes of becoming a musician. And finally, at some point, right around the time I was 22, I realized that I needed to do something better. And so with the help of my father, we both kind of agreed that me joining the Air Force would be a viable means for a more positive life. As obviously the direction I was headed, it could have been worse, but definitely could have been better. So the military was a really good choice for me. My first duty station was in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, not a whole lot to do. I quickly formed a band there, but I was also excelling very rapidly in the military. Pretty quick after I got stationed there, I went on my first deployment to Iraq. Not a good experience. I can definitely attribute a lot of my mental health issues and then future substance use, you know, especially just through self-medication kind of to get through some of those things, you know, which included a lot of nightmares, incredible anxiety, bouts of depression, other things that, as I grew older and through therapy kind of learned how to navigate, you know, so this pattern kind of continued, early mid 2000s, as I transitioned from active duty to being an active Air National Guardsman in the state of Nevada. I was actually moved back to Reno, and continued my military career. And again, excelled rapidly, but also, very much self-medicated, you know, due to the things I just mentioned that I was kind of dealing with internally. It got pretty bad at a point in Nevada, to where my then partner and I, who had two children together, decided that we were going to get married and take an assignment on Guam, which was an amazing assignment, incredibly beautiful island. But, you know, the isolation of being in the middle of the Pacific Ocean kind of got to me. The depression set in. So the self-medication continued. These behaviors continue. They tend to get worse. My marriage was, you know, ish, if I could use that word. You know, we focused mostly on our children and tried to give them a good experience on Guam, but we quickly realized that we needed to get back to the States. And so I accepted a position here in Colorado at Buckley Air Force Base in Aurora. Quickly after my wife and two daughters got here, we ended up getting a divorce, which, you know, obviously is a stressful situation. And in my particular situation, the agreement was that she was going to move to California and then we would share custody with our two daughters going back and forth from the Sacramento area to Colorado. So I see my children, you know, holidays, their school breaks and summers, you know, which has worked out. This has been going on now since my oldest was five and, you know, she's about to be 13. So it's something that we're accustomed to. But obviously, you know, that divorce and just the continuous stresses at work, the anxiety, the depression, all of those things just continued to lead to more and more self medication. You know, so at a certain point, my drinking got so much so to, you know, where there was a short period of time where I was drinking before work. I was drinking on my lunch break because I lived on the military installation. And then, of course, I would also drink at the end of the evening, you know, until I felt like I was numbed out enough to go to sleep and wake up and do it again. This began to obviously raise some concerns for me again at work. You know, I guess you could call me a functioning alcoholic. I know that term is a little taboo now, but I was definitely able to get to work and perform at a high level, but personally I was deeply affected and struggling. And so in 2018, with the help of two very close coworkers of mine, I took a bold step and made the move to become hospitalized and check myself into a facility here in the Denver area called Denver Springs. I completed that program. And then I did some more extensive outpatient program with that same facility, mostly groups, couple nights a week. And I loved it. I embraced it. And I very much excelled in the program. And after finishing that around summer of 2018, I was able to actually maintain sobriety for roughly 2 years. During those 2 years, things couldn't have been better for me. I continued to excel at work. My passion for music increased tenfold. The band I was playing in was starting to get some success in the Denver metro area. I went back to school for a second master's degree because I had hopes to becoming a therapist. So all things were looking good. My ex-wife and my daughters actually moved back to Colorado, which was wonderful. And then just before the pandemic in early March of 2020, The band that I was playing in, we happened to be performing one evening, and somehow, some way, I got the idea or the confidence or the thought or whatever you call it. You know, I told myself, hey, I think I can have a couple of drinks and, you know, be a normal social person. And that obviously was not the case. And pretty much from that moment on, right at the beginning of the pandemic, I began to fall back into the substance use. So much so that my commander at the time moved me from the position that I was in, which was a high level, I wouldn't say high level leadership position, but it was a leadership position. And, you know, I had a lot of responsibilities and was definitely counted on to be on point on a daily basis. He felt that I wasn't up to speed. And so I was removed from the position that I was in, which was a career field that I had done for roughly 18 years. So I had a lot of passion for it. That was a crusher to the ego, for sure. Things continued to progressively go downhill from there. My ex-wife ended up moving back to California, so kind of lost my children, you know, for the second time, you know, now they're having to go back and forth again. That stress weighed heavily into the anxiety and the depression that I had already fallen pretty deeply into. And it got to a really, really negative, dark place, you know, to where I was drinking very heavily on a daily basis. The same individual who assisted me in going to Denver Springs back in 2018 was instrumental in, he didn't need to convince me, trust me, I was ready to go back. But anyway, he escorted me right back to that same place. I was again hospitalized for 30 days, but this time we dove very deep into therapy, because most folks who suffer from substance use disorder, whatever substance that may be, is typically due to some sort of trauma. You know, everybody experiences trauma. I had some early childhood trauma, but there was a lot in the military that I just never dealt with due to, you know, fear of losing my job, fear of judgment, the fact that, you know, if you have substance use disorder, it's very taboo, you're a bad person, your family's disappointed in you, all the things, right? So I ended up going back to Denver Springs and successfully completing their program again. I had some pitfalls and ended up choosing to go to a separate facility called Footprints to Recovery, which is again in the Denver metro area, which it's a partial hospitalization program where for the next 6 months, that was basically my job. I didn't report to work. First probably 3-4 months of that time period, I was there 6 hours a day, in intensive group therapy, one-on-one therapy, and really just trying to get to the root of why, you know, why don't I go to the gym when I feel anxious, or why don't I do something more productive? Why am I numbing out using substance to figure it out and kind of reprogram my brain, right? So I did a lot of really hard work, both at Denver Springs and Footprints to Recovery, you know, when it comes to the therapeutic side. That ended up helping me immensely towards the end of my stint at Footprints to Recovery. I guess you can say I graduated. I was doing great. I was integrated back to work full time and was given an opportunity by some folks who understood my situation, and were very non-judgmental about it, and also knew my potential. And so I was fortunate enough to be reassigned to a unit within the Colorado Air National Guard. And that's where I have been since towards the end of roughly 2021. And it's been great. You know, I kind of learned different behaviors and, you know, different ways to manage the stress and the anxiety, and obviously, you know, stayed away from the substance use as much as humanly possible. Full transparency, in the last 2 years, there have been a handful of relapses. And they say that that's part of recovery. I don't like to look at it that way. You know, I'm kind of a black and white person, you know, and I go hard at 100% or I don't do it at all. You know, I did have some pretty traumatic things occur over the last couple of years. The loss of both of my parents were difficult for me. And there was a little bit of despair there, but I quickly pulled myself out of that and have been living, I guess, the dream since. I met a beautiful woman at the first part of 2022, and we're going to be married on 4 June. You know, so my current life in retirement, or approaching retirement, is great. In a military internship program that the Air Force offers to folks that are 6 months out of retirement to kind of integrate into a civilian company, hopefully with the result being full-time employment. And I've been focusing on my fiance and planning this marriage, my children, and I've dove very deep back into writing and recording music, and things are looking up for sure. And really is one day at a time. I wake up every day and tell myself to do the right thing. I even keep an app that tracks my progress. It's just something that helps me. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at and where I came from. And hopefully, you know, in the questions to come, I can share some more insight on how to understand the substance use disorder in a better way.
Oh, Michael, thank you. That was so great. You know, it really helped us understand better the journey from treatment through recovery and what a process it is. And there are ups and downs in that process. We just have to keep moving forward. Michael, can you share with us how your family and friends supported you while you were in active substance use? What do you appreciate that your family members did, and what do you wish was done differently?
I think it's important, first of all, to talk about how other users share their support, usually by partaking in the same habit that you partake in. I think just because you get that sense of camaraderie that you're both doing the same thing, so it's not really as bad as it actually is. That's actually not conducive to recovery. So I just wanted to point that out. As far as family and friends, it's huge for them to be able to take time to understand the issues behind the substance use, the particular trauma that may be triggering it, the fact that they listen and they ask questions, but to be completely transparent and really never allow you to get out of line, you know, because some of those late night conversations, especially if you're using the substance while speaking to a family member or friend, it's important that they remind you of who you are deep down, you know, the things you're good at, the fact that you're a brother, you're a sister, you're a son. Overall, for me, that I was a father. Those constant reminders were huge in my journey to recovery. At one point when I was still at Footprints to Recovery, they suggested that I go live in a sober living home. And at the time, that just wasn't something that I was willing to do. Owning a home, having children, other priorities in my life took precedence. And I just did not feel like I would have succeeded in that environment, although I know many who have. So during that time, my brother actually came to live with me for a couple of months. And that was something that we had worked out with the therapist at Footprints, and they thought it was a positive goal, and something that would allow me to get sort of the same experience as being in a sober living home. During that time, my brother and I became extremely close. We both share a passion for music. We were working out together constantly. We had many, many deep conversations and just strengthened our relationship overall. Same with my father. My father had always been the disciplinarian my whole life. Many, many, many evenings, I had long, deep conversations with him and learned that he had experience with substance use, you know, in his family growing up, and just what an empathetic and truly experienced man he was. And although I always spoke highly of him as being a great father, I just really started to realize like what an asset he was in my life. Same thing with my sister. All three of them were incredibly supportive, but they never let me get out of line. So that constant listening and assurance, having them in my life was the biggest help. A handful of friends, obviously, as well, who are on my team, that helped immensely. And if I could mention one thing that anybody could have done different, it really wouldn't have been any of those folks. It would have just been me listening to that sooner in life, you know, because there were periods over various years in my life where I could have used the help that I eventually got. And had I listened sooner, you know, we might be talking to an even different Mike now.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing this piece of your story with us. It really resonates with me and hopefully our listeners, the fact that you had that support from family and that they held you accountable in that way, yet they still loved you and listened to you. And I think that is such a big piece to this whole process. So appreciate those words spoken. I wanted to ask you, what do you want other family members to know about their loved one who is in active substance use disorder?
Big one for me, big one that was mentioned in many group settings in therapy is that there is no on and off button for these addictions. When somebody does suffer from extreme anxiety or depression, which are both symptoms of PTSD, any other traumatic experiences, once somebody's chosen a substance use path to sort of remedy or medicate those feelings, it's not a light switch, you know? So it's easy for somebody who doesn't have those types of issues or struggles or challenges in their life to look at somebody who does and to say, hey man, just don't do that anymore. It's a difficult, difficult uphill battle, and it takes a lot of time. So that's important for your circle to know. Another thing, you know, that I don't think a lot of folks really take the time to understand, especially with alcohol, is the withdrawals from constant use of alcohol are very painful and very scary. So much so that you can get seizures. There's a term called delirium tremens that you may or may not be familiar with, but it's just the last stage of alcohol withdrawal that can literally kill you. So for many folks with substance use disorders, it's so much easier to wake up and just continue the behavior so that you can go about your day and feel some sort of normalcy rather than stop. So all of those things combined, you know, the no on and off button, the huge amount of challenges to stop, the withdrawals, the shame, all of those things turn into the last straw where you have to do probably the most difficult part, which is asking for help. That's a very humbling and difficult experience. There's a lot of fear behind that. A huge fear for me, especially being in the military, was the judgment. It's still very taboo in military culture, although I will say that it has seen leaps and bounds in the programs that are offered to educate and help those going through this. Again, a huge part of your family and friends offering their help is to get that education about some of those things that I just mentioned. Because many of them have never experienced that. You know, family and friends have to stay away from that stigma and not buy into, I guess, the social norm or like the social thinking pattern of what somebody with a substance use disorder is like. I think our society, unfortunately, has disregarded a lot of folks who suffer from these things. Having education on mental health in general, the gentle reminders that we are who we are inside, I keep going back to that. You know, for me, being a musician, being a hard worker in the military, being an extremely loving father, all of that encouragement, all of those little things, you know, we have to hear that and not get not be allowed to get away with poor behavior, be held accountable. Celebrating the little wins is probably the biggest one too, you know. I can remember calling a sibling or my father or a friend and just being like, man, I haven't had a drink in 10 days. And when you're a guy who's drinking a gallon of vodka a day and waking up shaking and not knowing how you're going to get through the day without that particular substance, whatever it may be, that's a huge win. And it's a battle. And at the end of that day, when you lay your head down, and if you're able to get a good night's sleep, when you wake up in the morning and you feel not dehydrated, not anxious, not worried that you're going to be judged, that's the win. And it was those little wins that helped me and continue to help me every day.
Celebrate the little wins, Michael. That is such great advice for all of us. I wish I had celebrated the little wins with my brother before he died. Michael, can you describe how military family members can sound the alarm that their loved one is using substances without putting their career at risk? What was your experience with the military and your chain of command's perception of your substance use disorder?
I mean, I'd like to kind of preface it with drinking especially is still and has been a large part of military culture. You know, they do an amazing job of ensuring that we don't use other illegal substances, obviously, you know, through the use of drug testing, which I support. We deal with a lot of intense things in the military, and you got to be of right mind in order to accomplish those missions. But alcohol, you know, it's always at a party. It's always at a promotion. It's always at a retirement. It's always at any sort of military gala, if you will. You know, so that in general, I think needs to possibly change. But as far as with what family can do, especially if they are sensing that your behavior is changing or heading in a direction that may be harmful, first and foremost for your career, again, education. And the education piece here is taking it upon themselves to find those resources that are out there. And listening to stories like the one we're having now, like mine, there's many, being encouraging, but being transparent, the utter honesty, you know, especially for a guy like me who struggled, you know, in silence for the vast majority of my career. You know, I was at 17, 18 years of my career before I decided I needed to make a change and I needed some help. You know, getting that help earlier in a career could be very detrimental, and it could turn it around for somebody, and that somebody could do amazing things. You know, so there really are so many resources out there, and they're out there for a reason. And the individual with the substance use disorder needs to be aware of those. And the family members who are usually going to catch these behaviors first need to be aware of those as well. I was lucky coming from a military family that my father and my sister, you know, they were aware of a lot of these things and often encouraged me to take part and to use those resources. You know, but I can honestly say the vast majority of my career was absolutely amazing. The parts that I did make difficult were due to my own issues or my own insecurities, or, you know, my lack of strength and confidence to make change. There were a few leaders and medical professionals I feel that could have shown a little bit more support. But the ones that did show that support, I followed those folks. And it's amazing to see some folks who you would never know have experience with these situations that do show themselves during these times. And it was those people who knew my work ethic, had faith in the person that they knew that I was, and those were the individuals that gave me the opportunity to return to duty and to be able to excel in these last couple of years of my career. I worked really hard to do the right thing, or to do what I thought was the right thing. I used the resources that I was given, and I got back to a better place. You know, I still believe there's a lot of stigma that the substance user needs to get over, because it has gotten better. but it still makes it difficult to make that bold choice. It's still a very taboo topic in the military. And in the military, jobs are competitive, you know, so you're going to have those folks that are waiting for guys like me to make mistakes, right? Because, you know, they may be next in line. You know, I try not to take a look at those small negatives to deter anybody from taking the steps towards recovery. But, you know, some folks look out for themselves. I've also witnessed the opposite. And I've watched people reach out and really lend a hand. And if it wasn't for those people, there's a good chance I either wouldn't be here today, or I surely wouldn't be 2 months out from retirement.
And I think that from what you said about families and the fact that, you know, I think that many families, like our family in particular, you know, are fearful of what they don't know about their loved one struggling with substance use disorder. And the fact that you said the education piece and the resources make it more of a situation where families can maybe feel less afraid of the unknown when you mentioned that. So that, I think at the time we were going through it, could have been really helpful to hear your voice and the things that you said for us, and that may in fact help other families. So I appreciate that, along with those individuals that came forward for you that you didn't expect necessarily to, that did root for you during those hard times. What is your life like now, Michael, now that you are in recovery? How do your friends and family support you now?
I am happier than ever. I say that with full sincerity. Again, I'm getting married in 2 months, or I'm sorry, I'm getting married in 2 weeks. it's coming up here pretty quick. I'll be retired in 2 months. I'm fortunate to retire at a rank that I'm proud of. It's the same rank my father retired as. I have a job lined up. My two daughters will be here on Saturday to be at the wedding with us and spend the whole entire summer with us. I've been more creative lately than I have in a long time. I've been writing and recording music. I take a lot of pride in helping my fiance with her. She has a side crafting business. So we share a lot of that together on a daily basis. Even though I'm 44, I feel like I'm in the best shape or better shape than I have been in years. I have a positive mood most days. You know, I can tell you during those years of struggle, a positive mood was not common in my day to day. I wake up rejuvenated. I have an agenda. I know what I need to get done, and I'm proud of the things that I'm doing. I'm so looking forward to this next chapter of my life after I retire from the Air Force. And I really couldn't ask for anything more. I feel very lucky. I tell Sarah, my fiance, every day how lucky I am just to have the small things that I have in life. And I think I have a different outlook, and I wake up every day and I try to make the most of it, without the use of any substances, and just a positive mind frame. And it's been working pretty good. And so all I can hope is that that continues to work for me, and that anything that I've shared, in this interview touches somebody, a family member, a fellow military member, or just anybody in general who listens to stories like this. It's a huge uphill battle, but the view from the top is pretty amazing. And then I think the challenge from there is just to continue to stay on top, but never forget how you got there. It's very easy for people to fall back into those behaviors. I personally hope for myself that through everything I've learned and experienced, that I can stay where I'm at. And I'm very hopeful that that's the case.
Well, Michael, you've touched me deeply today. Thank you so much. You have a very bright future in front of you. What can you share today with those who are currently in the throes of substance use disorder?
Again, overcoming it will be the most difficult task and the most rewarding of your life. And you got to have the support. And as much as the support from your family and friends is huge, it's got to come from the individual. You know, it's like I said earlier, it's so easy to wake up feeling horrible and then to just continue the behavior so that you can get by, you know, just that day. And then it becomes a cycle. So when you get to the point where you're just sick of being sick and you want to get better, it really is you who has to want to get better. And that support is what's pushing you. But if you don't want to do it, it's likely not going to happen. But when you do it, the reward is absolutely worth it. It's a huge weight taken off your shoulders. The help's out there, and you just got to want it.
Great. Great, Michael. Thank you so much. And I also want to give a shout out to Save Project for introducing us. And now, let's talk about your band.
So I do actually, I write and record music for a band called Vegas Valley Drive. We are a, I guess you could say, Denver metro area band, in the vein of maybe melodic 90s punk rock music. Our singer, however, comes from a gospel background, so we like to call our music Motown punk. We are in the process of recording a new record as we speak. I've been writing and recording a lot, and we will be having a new record produced, mixed and mastered at a place called The Blasting Room up here in Northern Colorado, Fort Collins, in late September. So we're looking forward to releasing that and hopefully getting back out there and playing some shows.
Great. Thanks so much. We look forward to hearing more from you musically.
Awesome. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Michael. And you too are such an inspiration to me and everything that you've shared here with us today.
Absolutely. It was a total pleasure, and I'm happy to do it.
Wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, see if you can ignite that fire. To find your motivation to keep you going so you don't look tired. Look, they wonder if you're okay. It doesn't really matter what they think. Cause whether it be yay or nay, the real answer is they don't know.
I'm Ted Robertson. You've been listening to part two of a three-part series on substance use disorder presented by the University of Colorado's Colorado Consortium for Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention Affected Family and Friends Work Group. It's produced here in the Veterans Voice Studio, located on the campus of Mount Carmel Veterans Service Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado.